Welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a Pardes student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. There are blue skies in Jerusalem this afternoon, and we look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, who is the Mashgiach Ruchani, spiritual guide at Pardes. He will be teaching us about Chaye Sarah, the servant of Abraham. A couple of brief announcements, and then we'll turn it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. I am interested in examining chapter 24 of Bereishit, which talks about the story of finding a wife for Isaac. I'm not actually interested in talking about finding a wife. I'm interested in talking about the figure who is the central figure in the story sent by Abraham for this mission. Who is this person? If you were to ask anybody, and this certainly has support in rabbinic sources, who this individual is, they will tell you he is named Eliezer. If you go through all of chapter 24, you'll see that never once is his name mentioned. Throughout the chapter, he is referred to as the servant of Abraham. Why do we make the association of Eliezer with this person? Because in chapter 15 of Bereishit, sentence 2, when Abraham is petitioning God for the lack of a son, he mentions that he's going childless, and the steward of his house is Eliezer of Damascus. So it's a logical progression to come to the conclusion that if the steward of his house is Eliezer, and if Abraham is sending the servant, clearly this must be Eliezer who is mentioned in chapter 15. But why isn't his name mentioned? It would seem to be that the purpose of this chapter is to focus on what does it mean to be a servant. And perhaps the first thing is that when someone does something, they do it in service of someone else and not to make a name for themselves. So that if in the end they don't have the billing, if in the end, right, their name doesn't appear in lights, they will still be very content with what they did, with the knowledge that they have now accomplished a mission in service of someone else. Rashi quotes a rabbinic comment on sentence 42 and says the following: Yafes sichatan shel avdei avot mitoratan shel banim. More beautiful is the conversation of the servants of the patriarchs than the Torah of their sons. And then he goes on to say, Shaharei Parsha zo nichpela, that this section, this story, was repeated. Whereas gufei Torah nitnu birmiza, whereas there are many significant laws of the Torah that are only hinted at. And the question is, when one reads chapter 24, which in fact is 67 verses, why does the Torah have to go into such detail to describe the whole process of finding a wife? Why is it that the Torah not only tells me the story of what he did, but then records in detail his retelling of the story? And the answer is this Rashi, which I quoted, that when you read the story in all these details, you see what does it mean to be a servant, a faithful servant. And I'd like to now spend the next few minutes looking at a number of the details and see why this becomes so relevant and important to us. Generally, when we speak of a servant, it has pejorative connotations. It is not flattering for somebody to be called a servant. In fact, very often, people will interchange the word servant with slave. And it has the association of someone who's not a someone, but in fact an object. What I would like to now show is that, in fact, being a servant, rather than dehumanizing someone, can actually be liberating, can actually bring out your human grandeur. And in fact, I'd like to refer actually to the second verse in chapter 24, where when the servant is first introduced, it says, Vayomer Avraham, and Abraham said, El Avdo Zekan Beito, to his servant, the elder of his house, Hamoshel B'chol Asher Lo, who rules over all that is his. There seems to be a certain oxymoron here. How can you talk about a servant as being a ruler? And yet it may very well be that in an ideal world, a servant can actually be a ruler. That in fact, in service of someone else, you actually become a master. You exhibit your human grandeur. So let me go on to now show this in a number of ways. The first thing, Abraham starts out by telling the servant that he wants him to go and find a wife for his son, and says to him, under no circumstances should you take a Canaanite woman. Rather, I want you to go to my land, to my birthplace, and find a wife from there. At which point the servant comes along and says, but what if the woman won't agree to come with me? Should I bring your son back there? And Abraham then says categorically, no. What strikes me as fascinating is that the servant questions. The servant does not just take orders, does not just say, whatever you say, great. But the servant is thinking one step ahead, is anticipating his mission. He's now trying to think, if I really want to accomplish my goal, which is to get this wife, but what if? And he's pursuing a number of scenarios, and he wants to be able to get exact guidelines, which therefore means that a servant should be someone who has a mind of his own. We subsequently find that when he goes out, we're told that he takes 10 camels laden with all the good of his master. We're not told that Abraham gave him that. And it would be very reasonable to assume that he was the one who made that decision. That he was the one who thought in advance, how should I now go to these people? How am I going to present myself? That I want to be able to now show them who I'm representing, who my master is, a man of excessive wealth. Eliezer goes on his trip. When he finally comes to the place, comes to the well, we find that he sets up a test to see who this woman is. Who is the right woman for his master's son? The test is that if I now say, please give me something to drink, and she says, not only should you drink, but I will give your camels to drink, and I will give you to drink to your full. She's the woman. Abraham didn't tell him to set up that test. That was his initiative. He set up the test because he knows what virtues, what qualities are needed for this woman to be the appropriate wife of Yitzchak. The most important quality is she has to be a woman of chesed, of kindness. So that he has set up a test of character, of virtue, to determine the most appropriate person. But what's fascinating is that at the same moment that he sets up this test, he prays to God. And he says to God, "Please, God, bring me this woman," which shows you something about what it is to be a servant. And here I would like to perhaps insert, he is not only the servant of Abraham, but he's a servant of God. As a servant of God, he realizes that you need to be able to integrate action with prayer. You need to be able to ask of yourself, how do I maximally do whatever I can possibly do? And yet at the same time realize that whatever you're doing, whatever mission you have, you can never accomplish solely by your own actions, but that you need to have the assistance of God. And in order to get that, you pray. And lo and behold, we find instant feedback. As soon, even before he's finished praying, immediately God responds by sending him this woman, Rebecca. One other point which I'd like to bring up. When Eliezer is brought to Rebecca's family, and it seems that he projects a very impressive personality, they offer him to come sit, have something to eat. And he says immediately, "Before I eat anything, I want to tell you my story." And the first thing which he does is to introduce himself. "I am the servant of Abraham." It's very important that he be very honest, upfront, who he really is. And it's also important that for him, having the title servant is a badge of honor. But then what you find is how he is an expert at marketing. How does he go on to talk to them? He starts describing, "And I want you to know that my master Abraham is somebody who became exceptionally wealthy." And he doesn't just suffice it by saying he's wealthy. He describes in detail, he has silver, he has gold, he has maids, he has servants, he has donkeys, he has camels. He has a special wife whose name is Sarah, who had a child only after she was very, very old, as a way of setting up a situation. Here is this extremely wealthy individual, Abraham, who has a special wife, who's been yearning to have a child, and finally, long last, they have a child when she's old. And then the conclusion is forthcoming. "And everything which Abraham has, he will give to Yitzchak." Eliezer is a great salesman. He knows his audience. He knows that the people that he's dealing with are people for whom money speaks. And he has to somehow speak their language and thereby sell Yitzchak. Eliezer, the servant, is remarkable. He is somebody who, on the one hand, is a spiritual personality. He prays to God. He bows down, thanking God, when later on the family agrees to let Rivka go to be Yitzchak's wife. And yet the same person who is a spiritual individual is very much down to earth. He knows people where they're at. He's able to not only talk the language of God, but to also speak the language of people. He's able to negotiate. He's able to sell. And yet at the same time pray. As a servant, he is an expert at execution, and yet at the same time, he's also an expert at planning, at thinking through before he does anything, what do I need to do? Taking into consideration all the scenarios, planning everything so that in the end, the execution will be perfect. In fact, Eliezer, in many ways in the story, is a carbon copy of his master, Abraham. We find that Abraham is the exact same type of individual. Abraham is clearly a man of the spirit. He does remarkable acts in service of God. He builds altars, calls out in the name of God. He's prepared to offer up his son for God. He argues with God when God says he's about to destroy the city of stone. And yet the same Abraham in the beginning of this week's parsha engages in crass negotiations to be able to have a burial plot for his wife. The same Abraham in last week's Torah portion bows down before three men who are his guests and extends unbelievable hospitality. Eliezer, who I said is the reflection of Abraham, who is the servant of God par excellence, is not only the servant of Abraham, but the servant of God. And I want to end on the following note. I said to you that in this chapter, he is referred to as the servant. But that's actually a little bit misleading. He's also referred to as the man. And it's very interesting to see when he's called by that term, the man. Rebecca, when she sees him as the man. Rebecca's family see him as the man. What is the man? The rabbis in quite a few places say whenever the Torah says the man, it means a man of stature, a man of greatness. Eliezer, who sees himself and acts as a servant, in fact, projects the image to the world at large. He's not a servant, but he's a man of stature, a great man. And perhaps this is something that we can learn from. We all, in many ways, are servants. It would be a delusion to think that we are not in service of someone, whether it be in terms of our job, whether it be in terms of our family, whether it be in terms of our friends, or whether it be in terms of God. The question always is, to whom do we subordinate ourselves? Who do we want to serve? What missions do we want to take on? What projects do we want to promote? What personalities do we want to somehow emulate and to internalize? Chapter 24 is showing a servant of Abraham, who wants to emulate the qualities of Abraham, who succeeds in doing that, who by doing that enters into another relationship of being a servant of God, and as a result of that becomes a man of stature. This is something for us to aspire to become people of stature through the medium of being a servant. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.